chazara of the Malachos, say chazara because we did these in more length 2 years ago for those of you who are with us, but it's either a chazara or a quick paced introduction to each Malacha. The first of the Malachos is a pretty long one, so because in the interest of covering ground, no pun intended in the case of this Malacha, we want to try to stick to a one Malacha a week kind of pace. I have to decide, because we'll have to watch the clock, see how many points we can cover today about this Malacha, which is a very major Malacha. And part of what we'll see as we go one Malacha at a time is similar to what we said about Hanukkah, the sugyas build on each other. So Malachas also, the sugyas build on each other. And in each Malacha, pretty much, very often you'll find a major discussion, which is really not just about that Malacha, it's about Shabbos in general, it's about the nature of Malachas. So that's an important question to ask, how much you can do that, how much you can extrapolate from one Malacha to the other, but this is a major area in which this comes up. This Malacha of Zareah is a couple of major broad points that address other Malachas. So we'll see how much we can discuss today, how much we can save for other contexts, and we'll come back to it in the interest of time. So we'll experiment how much we can cover in this kind of a format. The first Malacha, the way we count it, seems to be Zareah. I say that so tentatively because not everyone counts the Malachas the same way. And the Rishalmi has it differently. And the Rambam, when he lists the Malachas, he starts with Choresh. And indeed, the Bavli picks up on the fact that Zareah is a somewhat surprising choice to start with for the Malachos, because it doesn't come first. The first 11 Malachos go in order, what's known as Sidur de Pas. We discussed in our general introduction before Yantif that it's not clear whether Sidur de Pas has any actual significance from the Mishkan. Then it's only according to the other Rishonim, such as Rav Haigon, that Sidur the Pas was actually relevant to the Mishkan, because the Lechem HaPanim were part of the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. But the way Rashi understands it, and the way that probably most people would guess, is that a Malacha is something that was done in the construction of the Mishkan, so Pas was not really relevant. And the assumption then is that this whole march towards Bishul is about the creation of the dyes that were used for the coloring of the different materials in the Beis HaMikdash. But in any event, the way we have it, we assume that these first 11 Malachos all seem to lead up to, let's say, the creation of bread, for the sake of simplicity. So the first step, then, is not really planting. The first step is plowing. So really, plowing should have been listed first. And our Gemara, the Argmar, meaning the Bavli, raises this question. Right after the Mishnah, and I'm Gimel and Aleph, where all the Malachas are listed. So the Bavli asks, it would seem to be that it's a little bit out of order, that plowing should come first. So the Gemara has an answer for that, but in any event, the Rambam adopts the Seder that when he lists the Malachas, Harisha is mentioned first. And some of the Svarim, they list the Malachas, so you'll find different attitudes in terms of what comes first. I think of a Rabbiat's book, Harisha comes first. You have different Svarim on the Malachas. Listen to different orders, but in any event, we'll start with Zareya, we'll work off the Mishnah. But their order is actually relevant to one of the details in Zareya, because there is a question of what is the shear for Zareya. So if you look at Rashi on the Mishnah, right, so Rashi in the Mishnah, Dibra Maschel Ha'ofeh. So when he's talking about the Sidur of Pas, basically about these first 11 Malachas, so he explains on Ha'ofa that according to him it doesn't have any role in the actual Mishkan, he talks about that. But then the very end of the Rashi, he says, V'shiurin sho'elu kigroyus, that these Malachas, meaning apparently these first 11, the Sidur of Pas, the shir is a grogus. The shir is like a little small dried fig. Chutz mechoresh, with the exception of choresh, the Bekol Shehu, the Kaman Perkabona, that it comes out from the Gemara later on, that Choresh, one violates the Kol Shehu. So we'll talk about Choresh in its own context, but it sounds like from that Rashi that what's the shear of Zareah? Sounds like it's a Grogerus. Sounds like he said that all of these Malachos are Grogerus with the exception of Choresh. But the Rambam reads it differently. The Rambam understands that the shir is a kol shehu, under the understanding that it's significant, any amount of planting is significant, because as we know from Jack and the Beanstalk, that things get bigger. So that's the whole point, that you put in a little bit, it becomes something much bigger. So if you want to look towards the significance, you don't need that much of a planting for something to be significant. So what it sounds like, when the Prima Gadim understands it, and the Chassinuf understands it, it sounds like it's a machlokus between Rashi and the Rambam. That Rashi says that everything is a grogris, and the Rambam says that it's a kol shehu. And some understand that maybe this connects to a broader Shabbos machlokus, like we discussed before Yontif, the question of, do we look at a malacha based on how much the person is exerting himself, so to speak, or do we look at the effect on the world? We talked about it at some length before Yontif. So maybe that's the question here. There's a sefer called Bikuri Yitzchak that suggests along those lines that maybe that's the machlokas. Does it have to be significant when it goes in, because that's what you're doing, or does it have to be significant when it comes out? At any event, not everyone agrees that there is a machlokas here, and that's what I was alluding to a minute ago, that it depends on really what the first malacha is, that it could be that Rashi was saying that from Choresh on, it's all going to be a grogris, but pre-Choresh, anything before that, is subject to its own standard. So there is a little bit of a debate. Some suggest that in the Sefer Salmderach, or Simchus Asubroi, the Sefer, I quote him sometimes in the context of his Chumashar, he has a Sefer on Masech HaShabbos as well. So there he thinks that there is a fundamental difference between these first two, between Zareya and Choresh, and the rest that come afterwards, that until you have Choresh, and until you have Zareya and Choresh, so it's Avodas Karka. And the whole notion of a grogris as a shear is because a grogris is a food item, that these Avodos, which are food-oriented, are grogris by their nature. But once you're planting in the ground and you're plowing the ground, that's not about working on ochel. So therefore, it's not subject to the grogris shir. And essentially, maybe that's what Rashi is getting at too, that these first two malachas have a grogris shir, have a kol shehu shir. Rav Asher Weiss suggests a little bit in the middle that the shir significance is really just little seeds. So it's less than a grogris, but it's more than a kol shehu, so Rashi didn't feel the need to get so specific about it because it's still basically somewhere in the middle. In any event, doesn't really, along the lines of that point, it doesn't have so much of a nafkamina because we're talking about a very small amount in any event. It's really more relevant just in terms of understanding what the nature of this malacha is. Is the malacha about how you're exerting yourself and putting it in, or is the malacha about the result, the impact on the world? And at any event, you plant a little bit, you plant a grogris, everyone agrees that there is a chiyuv there. It's interesting that in terms of defining what the malacha of Zareya is, and this is something which is going to have an impact on everything, so planting in the ground is clearly Zareya, but we find that there's much more that's included within Zareya. And that's what the Yerushalmi has an expansive list. The Yerushalmi lists a whole bunch of different actions, Yerushalmi commenting on this Mishnah. And he basically says everything that comes to prepare the produce is included in Zareya. So anything that makes the ground produce better is all going to be included. And the Yerushalmi includes in this definition even some negative actions, such as a ma'ashen, a madliya, that if somebody smokes the ground so that all the insects will get out, or he plucks out the worms. So that's included in Zareya. And the latest farm point out that this is a little bit surprising. There's a discussion about this in the Sefer Chutshani, of Robert Nissen Karelitz, that normally we have an attitude that if you're preventing the negative, so then that's not considered to be a affirmative action. We call mavriach ari, in general, you're chasing away a lion, stopping a problem, but especially when it comes to malachos, malachos are generally defined by positive action. So it's surprising a little bit some of this language in the Yerushalmi, but apparently there is this broader understanding of what Zareya is, that anything that makes the food grow better is going to be Zareya. But presumably it has to be actions that are done on the karka itself, or on the plant itself. But for example, if you're going to chase out dogs from coming into the field, that's not going to be the same thing as plucking out worms. That's going to be something that's completely external. Just because your fields end up benefiting from it, that's probably too indirect and not on the heft itself. That's the way the poskim seem to understand to be included in Zareya. But there are some interesting tshuvas about spraying for locusts. Sifei Safrank has a tshuva about that. This is something that that Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein talks about in Sefer Tashukei Chemed, that maybe spraying for locusts, which may have other issues, but maybe if you're spraying the plants itself, shouldn't that perhaps be an issue with your Shalmi's understanding of the more negatively oriented aspects of Zareya? So he also points out that it's different from, let's say, other malachas, that even if you're taking out one worm and you're still leaving in other worms, so the plant is still impeded, but you're improving it a little bit by taking away the one worm, that's probably also in the spirit of what the Yerushalmi includes in the Malacha of Zareya. So, assuming though that the core Zareya is putting something in the ground, so there is a very, very major machlokas. Very major machlokas Rishonim, Achronim, maybe it's a machlokas Tanoim, machlokas Amoraim. It's been interpreted on many different levels and found in many different places in terms of how, on a very fundamental level, the Malacha of Zareya could work. And as I mentioned, it's been found to apply to Rishonim, to early Achronim, to Amoraim, but it's most famously known as a machlokas, the Rashash and the Minchas Chinuch. So we'll use them as the major players here, even though it can be found on many different levels. Just as a point of historical interest, the Rashash and Minchas Chinuch were almost exact contemporaries. They lived almost the exact same years in the 19th century. They both lived for most of the 1800s. It's not so long ago. The Rashash, we quoted him last week talking about his comment on Neres Hanukkah. Rashash, again, as an Achron, lived only 200 years ago, but one of his great claims to fame is, despite the fact that he was a businessman, he was a very wealthy man who was working a lot of the day, but he found a lot of time to learn. And he is one of the few, but most of Rishonim don't have this distinction, that he could check to see if it really is true, but he supposedly wrote on every daf and shas. Every daf and shas, you have a comment from the Rashash, which, you know, you can't even say that about Rashi, you can't necessarily say that about too many of the Rishonim, but the Rashash was very prolific, despite the fact that he was making his fortune a lot of the time. And the Rashash has a major machlokas with the Minchas Chinuch about the following point. Presumably, it's only called Zareya if you put a seed in the ground, and the ground could absorb the seed, and the seed's going to take root. If you put a seed in a soda can, where it's not going to have any potential to grow, so then presumably there's no malacha there. It has to be in something that's meaningful, and it has to presumably get absorbed, otherwise it's not really connecting to anything. Now the problem is, that takes some period of time. Gemara happens to have a machlokas how long it takes for a seed to be niplat, for a seed to be absorbed in the ground. We can work with a number, let's say it takes 3 days. That's one opinion in the Gemara, but it's not really so important what the exact number is. We know that it's more than a day. It takes some significant period of time, more than a day, for the seed to take root. So therefore, the question could be asked, how do you ever have the malacha of Zareya? If you put the seed in the ground on Shabbos, so it's not going to take root until after Shabbos. So in order to be chayiv, in order for that to be a malacha, you have to tell me that you can start a malacha on Shabbos and have it finished after Shabbos and it's still called a malacha. Now to do it the other way is even less viable, to say, well, let's say it's 3 days, so if you plant on Wednesday, so then you're going to be chayiv on Shabbos. That's harder to say because you're completely passive when that takes place. And as we established again before Yantif, where Malacha means you're doing something on Shabbos. So it's very hard to say that the Malacha of Zareya is based on something you do before Shabbos. So if we have this time delay, so we got to pick one of the elements. So it's only logical that it's putting it in the ground, that's the Malacha, but how is that meaningful if it doesn't take root on Shabbos? How could that be considered a Malacha? So this is a question that's asked in the abstract, but it's also asked specifically because of a Gemara in the first paragraph of Shabbos. There's a little bit of a preview of Yetzias HaShabbos Sugya, and to get a little bit of some advanced work done on that, that the Gemara has a very important discussion about the following situation. The Gemara says, let's say somebody bakes bread on Shabbos. So the Gemara wants to know, maybe it's somebody else who's baking bread, maybe it's you who's baking bread, but you've put bread in the oven on Shabbos. So the Gemara asks, can you stop this Aveira before it's finished? And before you become Chayiv for the Malacha? So the issue that the Gemara has is not about whether that's possible or not. The issue is that there's an Issur D'Rabbanan called Rediya Sapas, there's an Issur D'Rabbanan to take the bread out of the oven on Shabbos. So that's what the Gemara wants to know. Do we allow you to violate that Issur D'Rabbanan? And the Gemara says, if somebody else put the bread in, so should we allow you to do a little Aveira, so to speak, in order to save your friend from a bigger Aveira? Do we allow you to do it yourself to save yourself from a bigger Aveira? That's the whole thrust of the Gemara. That's what the Gemara wants to know. Do we say, Chatei kidei shiyizke chavercha, chatei kidei shiyizke atzmacha? Can you do a smaller sin to prevent a bigger sin? But the premise of the Gemara seems to clearly be, one way or another, that if you have the bread in the oven and you take it out before it finishes baking, then you should save yourself from the malacha. Everyone follow? So the question is, if that's true, so it sounds like if you have a malacha that takes a little bit of time, and you stop it in the middle, then you're off the hook. So if that's the case, again, we have this problem when it comes to bishul, because first of all, you could ask the question, what happens, or what happens if you put seeds in the ground and you take them out afterwards? That would seem to parallel what the Gemara talks about in terms of baking bread. And whether or not you take it out afterwards, the malacha never finishes on Shabbos. So if you need to finish the malacha in order to be chayiv, and the malacha doesn't finish on Shabbos, how exactly is it that you can ever be chayiv for Zareya? How does the malacha of Zareya exist conceptually? That's the basic question all these farim struggle with. So the basic difference in approach has to do with whether you accept that Zareya and Bishul are parallel or not. Which again is a general question. Do you assume malachas have to match? Ritzi Pesach Frank has a tshuva which he discusses in the context of other malachas, that maybe this whole discussion is a futile discussion, that maybe malachas don't match in general. There's a lot of questions you could ask, the general questions about Shabbos and other things. First of all, does Shabbos have to match other Averos? If you have all many Malachos are also Averos in other contexts. Zareya is a Malacha in the context of Shemitah. It's an Isser of Kiloyim. It's an Isser of Nachal Eson. Bishul is a Avera in the context of Basa B'Cholav. You have a lot of Malachos which are Averos in other areas of Halacha. So is it fair to assume that whatever the definition is in the context of Shabbos is a definition in other areas of life? Many assume yes, and many say not necessarily, that when it comes to Shabbos, the malachas are based on the Mishkan, and the malachas also perhaps have to be active, like the premise that we posited before Yantiv. So maybe you have different sets of rules. How do you know that you can necessarily compare definitions of actions in the context of Shabbos and in the context of other areas? That's a question in general. But even if you want to take the general issue out of it, so even when it comes to Shabbos, maybe each malacha has its own parameters. And maybe some malachos are action-based and some are result-based, and maybe they don't compare to each other. Tzvi Pesach Frank took this attitude in the Tshuva. He said that you can't necessarily assume that malachos are going to parallel each other. But nonetheless, many did feel that there should be some consistency here. So how do you acknowledge that Zareya could exist while also seeing that Bishul could be interrupted in the middle? So you have, let's say, two basic approaches with many nuances in between them. But the approach of the Rashash is that you are chayiv for both Zareya and Bishul the moment you put the item in play. When you put something in the oven, you put bread in the oven, and you put seeds in the ground, you're chayiv then. However, it's conditional. And if it turns out later that the malacha did not actually take root, then you're off the hook retroactive. So they both have the same kind of structure. They're chayiv when you do it, and it can be canceled later, and it's totally on what happens afterwards. And the Menchas Chinuch disagreed with the whole premise. The Menchas Chinuch thought that there's a fundamental difference between Zareya and Bishul. We don't have to see them as the same. And that Zareya happens when you put it in the ground, and Bishul happens when the food is baked. And therefore, that's why our Gemara in Daf Dalet says that you can cancel Bishul in the middle because the Malacha is not finished yet. But Zareya is finished the moment you put it into the ground. Hi.
Could it be that they're both, you're on Kai and they both finish? Because Zareya doesn't finish on Shabbos, though, you could, when it finishes, the original actually makes you Kai.
On Shabbos, that's basically Rosh Hashanah's position.
Yeah,
so I have to discuss the nuances for a few minutes. And this is maybe you could spend hours talking about this topic. We'll just try to lay it out for a few minutes to give you a comparison for each case. So I think what the Rosh Hashanah's position is basically like, to give you an example from my life. I once wanted to register to vote, and I changed my address. And so the last day that you could register, I faxed in the application. And then they called me from the Elections Bureau and they said they can't accept the fax, they need the original signature, so I have to mail it in. So I said, okay, if I mail it in, I won't be registered in time because this was the last day, it won't get there. So they said, no, they just need the original. So when I mail it in, they'll accept this registration by the deadline. The fax, they'll accept the fax later on when they get the registration in the mail. So basically, I registered on the day before the deadline. But it's all contingent on them getting the proof later on, then they'll uphold that registration. So that's essentially the Rosh Hashanah's position, that the malacha took place when you did it, but it's not a malacha unless it ends up having this impact. So if it turns out later that it doesn't have this impact, then it turns out that you didn't do a malacha. That has all kinds of major implications, which we'll discuss in a second. While the Menchas Chinuch's position seems to be to look at Zareya separately for a second, that you can distinguish between planting and something being planted. That yes, it's true that the seed is not planted until it takes root, but you plant it when you put it in the ground. So give a mushroom, mahadavar doma, let's say somebody shoots somebody else in January, and the person is in a coma for 2 months, and he dies in March. So when did the person die? He died in March. When did the murderer commit murder? He committed murder in January. And so when the person dies in March, you can't say, oh, I was in Antarctica at the time, I was in a different place, I have a good alibi. Because he did his action, his liability comes from what he did in January. But the action that he did only actually took effect later on. So it's possible to say that you have such a distinction when it comes to planting. You planted it on Shabbos, it was planted 3 days later. And why is Bishul then different? Why don't we say the same thing when it comes to Bishul? So there are many, many svaras that the Achronim have to distinguish, just to try to say them somewhat simply. You could say that it's really a Lashon B'nei Adam distinction. I think that's one relevant distinction. That when it comes to, let's say if I have bread in the oven and somebody asks you, so did you bake the bread? So what will you say? You say, I'm baking it now. Because as long as it's in the oven, you have your mind is still on it. You have to pay attention to it. You have to be aware that it's in the oven. You're still in the process. But if you put seeds in the ground and somebody asks you a day later, did you plant the seeds? So you won't say, yeah, I'm planting them now. keep your mind on it until it actually takes root. You understand that your role is over as soon as you put it in the ground. Watering it and everything, that's a different role in terms of nurturing the growth of the plant. But the actual putting it in the seeds, putting the seeds in the ground, you did that already. So there is a Lashon B'Adam distinction, which is probably indicative of a broader distinction, that the human role is over when you put it in the ground, and it's not over when you put it in the oven. Another way to say it, Rav Asher Weiss points out something along these lines, is that bishul is not something that you find in nature. Bishul is something that you have to do yourself using natural tools. So you're considered to be the person doing it the whole time that it's in process. While zriya is something that does happen in nature. Nature basically takes over as soon as you put the items in the ground. And therefore, again, the ma'isa adam, the act that the person does in terms of his partnership with nature, is really done when he puts the seed in the ground. There are other distinctions that you could make. You know, another point, for example, basically our ovens, even in the time of the Gemara, really cooking something could mean that you, like you barbecue on a campfire, and you take something on a stick and you hold it over the fire. So we have a more sophisticated system, even already in the time of the Gemara, a more sophisticated system, where you don't have to hold it on a stick. You can put it in a box that gets hot, that contains fire, and it gets cooked that way. But the box is really a stand-in for your hand, is really a stand-in for your holding it over the fire. So all of this is an extension of a human action. While that's not true, when it comes to Zriya, when it comes to planting, everything the human being needs to do, he's done it when he puts it in the ground. So it could be distinctions along those lines. But whatever it is, the Menchasinach and others in his camp, they didn't buy this whole comparison between Zriya and Bishul, and you essentially don't have to ask the question from one to the other. So there are major nafkaminas between these two positions, lahalacha. This is actually a much more significant question than the question of the shear, because it's a shear, whether it's a grogers or kosher, because there are some very significant halachic implications between these two issues. Jonathan?
The poskim connect this at all with the idea of tzad, of setting up a trap and then later on and taking
in a sense, you know, but we connected not so much in this discussion, but tzad, and God willing, we never did tzad the first time, so God willing, we'll do tzad in more length this year. But tzad is a fascinating malacha. It has a lot of, just like Zorei, a lot of the big kholistic discussions come around tzad. And tzad, by its very nature, challenges a lot of the kolim and hilchos Shabbos. In its very nature, it's got nuances to it that don't seem to match the other malachos and Shabbos. So those who would posit, for example, that maybe some malachos are about an action and some malachos are about a result, will take note of the fact that tzad has these differences to it, and it's hard to extrapolate from tzad to anything else. Although done nonetheless, and we'll talk about that today as well. But tzad is definitely a part of the broader conversation of how you understand Malachas Shabbos in terms of an action or an adult. But a little bit beyond this particular Zorei official discussion. So there are at least two major halachic ramifications. What are the two major halachic ramifications? Maybe you can think of more, but there are at least two major halachic ramifications between the Rosh Hash and the Chasinuch. Anyone want to tell me what I'm talking about? Sorry?
You dig up your seed.
Right, so one major nafkamina is, can you cancel the malacha of Zoraya? Since the Gemara is clear that you can cancel the malacha of Bishul, that if you take the food out of the oven, you take the bread out of the oven in the case of Ofeh before it's done, then the malacha will be prevented. So does that work when it comes to Zoraya? So that was that big machlokas. According to the Menchas Chinuch, no way. Once you put it in the ground, it's done. And if you come and undo it afterwards, there may be reasons to do that, but that's not considered to be helpful in terms of canceling your original malacha. You should do tshuva for original malacha, but you can't undo it through taking the seeds out of the ground. And according to the Rosh Hash, there is this direct parallel between Zriya and Bishul. So if you take the seeds out of the ground, so then you will undo your malacha. So that's a very significant difference. That's huge. That has major implications whether or not you should do that. So first of all, I should note that the Eglei Tal, the Avnei Nezer, stakes the middle ground, again no pun intended, in this discussion, that he basically agrees with the Menchas Chinuch that taking it out afterwards is not going to make a difference. unless he has a little bit of a nuance here. He says, unless you, for some reason, did it like that on purpose, and you weren't, I don't know why you would do this, but if you planted the seeds with the intent to take him out afterwards, so then the Egg Vital says that taka would not be a malacha, you would cancel it by taking it out later. I don't know why you would do this. Maybe somebody at gunpoint says, I want you to be Mechal Shabbos and plant these seeds, so you'll have in mind, you'll come back later and take it out. I don't know, or you want to teach Hilchos Shabbos, so show and tell, so you. So if I would do this and leave it here, it would be a malacha. I don't know why you would do this, but that's what the Egg Vital says. The Minchas Chinuch explicitly disagrees with this, and Rav Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva like that also, where he says that he doesn't think that makes a difference. Even if your intent is to take it out, again, the malacha is putting it in the ground where it could take root. And even if you intend to take it out, he says that's like if you build a building and you intend to knock it down, so you wouldn't say that's not binyan. And it's the same thing. Others question that comparison. They said when you build the building, it's built right now. So the fact that you intend to take it down later, maybe that shouldn't make a difference. But here, the seeds have not yet taken root, and you're going to take it out before that happens. So maybe, Taka, there's what to say that if you intend to do that, it should make a difference. But in any event, that's the Egg Vital's middle position. But the Minchas Chinuch is clear that taking it out later does not make a difference. You've already done the malacha. And the Rosh Hashanah's position is that you can do that, you can take it out. Now it's interesting, there was a machlokas. I just mentioned the Egg Vital. The Egg Vital is the author of the Atshuvas Avnei Nezer. Again, he's a very, very frequent presence in Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Chanukah and Hilchos everything else. But there was an interesting exchange of letters among his Talmidim. I guess there was a little bit of discord in class about this question, because there are many Sfarim that are written by the Talmidim of the Avnei Nezer, and if you look at them, there's a continuation of this particular discussion, that the Chelkas Yoav, who was a Talmud of the Avnei Nezer, as a tshuva, where he stakes out the position of the Rosh Hash. He basically says that if you come out afterwards and you take the seeds out, you will be exempt. And some agreed with him. The Sfas Emes has a comment like that. The Sfas Emes interpreted Yerushalmi along those lines, that you could theoretically stop the Malacha afterwards. And others disagreed. The Marsham wrote a letter to the Chelkas Yoav disagreeing with him. And another one who disagreed with him is his classmate, the Kli Chemda. The Kli Chemda is also a Talmud of the Avnei Nezer, so I'm calling him his classmate. He wrote a sefer on Chumash, which is very Lumdish, one of the earlier Svarim, nowadays a very popular genre. The Kli Chemda is one of the earlier Svarim where he wrote Lumdus on the Parsha. So in his Sefer on Chumash, he talks about this. And he has a fundamental objection. He says that Shabbos is only on Shabbos. And if the Rosh Hash and the Chelkas Yoav are right, it comes out that in order to keep Shabbos, you'll sometimes have to do something on Sunday. It says that's conceptually impossible, because presumably if you planted something on Shabbos, so in order not to do a malacha, you're now mechuyev to take it out. It would come out if you can stop the malacha, so presumably you'd be obligated to do that. If Sunday morning you realize you did this, you'd be obligated to take it out. He says it's conceptually impossible to say that you have a chiyuv on Shabbos, a chiyuv because of Shabbos, after Shabbos. He found that to be conceptually impossible. So in any event, there was a major machlokas among the Achronim that followed about this principle, including within the students of the Avnei Nezer, they argued on each other about this question about whether the malacha can take place afterwards. It's discussed as well, the Sefer Shvisas HaShabbos. It would seem malacha l'maisa that it's kedai to do this, because there is a view that it's possible. It's only a question whether you could do it on Shabbos itself. So Shvisas HaShabbos talks about that. If you do it on Sunday, it'll be just as effective, because however the period of time is, it's definitely longer than a day. But the question comes up, can you do it on Shabbos? It seems to be, this is not 100% muskum, but it seems to be that we don't assume that it would be kotzer to take it out. That's something we'll have to discuss. It doesn't seem to be, your intuition might be to think that Zareya and Kotzer are direct opposites. So whatever is considered to be Zareya, to do the opposite is Kisira. It's not likely that that's the case. I saw in one sefer the quote from Shlomo Zalman Arbach that he thought that maybe there is an issue of Kisira here. But most of the Svarim that discuss this don't think there's necessarily an issue of Kotzer in taking the seeds out of the ground. It's maybe a Shiloh of Muktzah. So it depends whether it's edible seeds that you could eat, so it's not going to be muktzah, or non-edible seeds that would be muktzah, so maybe it's a shaila of muktzah, but the most common approach you see here is that it's not necessarily a shaila of kotzer, but okay, it's a little bit of a question whether you can do this on Shabbos itself, but on Sunday, so presumably because you have a number of achronim who think it'll save you, so you have a motive to do this, even though again, that's the whole point, that it doesn't make sense that Shabbos has any obligations on Sunday, that Shabbos should only have obligations on Shabbos. But so that's one of the major nafkaminas, this question of can you cancel out the malacha of Zriya in the middle? What's the other major ramification of this machlokes between the Menchas Hinuch and the Rashash? So the other ramification is for other malachas, such as Vasha and Ofer, that it comes out that according to the Rashash, all you need to do a malacha that has an extended period of time is started on Shabbos, and then if it's finished ever, say the Chayiv. But according to the Menchas Chinuch, there is no real comparison here, and that malachas in general need to be started and finished on Shabbos. We don't have any precedent from Zoraya that you can have a malacha go to the end of Shabbos, because he defines Zoraya as differently than Bishul. So therefore, nafkamina lahalacha, if you would put something in the oven right before Shabbos is over, this is a major discussion in the poskim, which all correlates to this issue. If you put something in the oven right before Shabbos is over, so it comes out that according to the Menchas Chinuch, you would not be chayiv for that. And according to the Rashash, you would be chayiv for that. So that has major nafkaminas as well. Whether that's a Mr. Rabbanan or Mr. Raisa, what exactly is the status of that? Those are two pretty significant nafkaminas about the conceptual understanding of what's going on with the malacha of Zareya.
Hi. When we say, so Lamaisa, if you want to start baking chametz for Shabbos ends,
Well, it's definitely not mutter drabana. You know, it's definitely wrong to do, but you wouldn't be chayiv for it. You know, putting something in the oven, you know, we would have the nafkamina for that whole story about taking it out of the oven. You know, the whole machluk is that even kedai take it out of the oven, you'll say that why should I violate the sister drabana taking it out of the oven when it's not going to be chayiv anyway. You know, the premise of the Gemara is maybe you should take it out of the oven to save yourself from the chiyuv of the malacha. So in that case, according to the Menachas Chinuch, he won't even have the chiyuv of the malacha. So there's a nafkamina for that. Okay, so that's one of the major issues that comes out of this whole story. And again, there are those who tie this into the question of Maisa and Totsah. But again, do we look at this malacha, or do we look at malachas in general based on what you're doing, or based on the overall impact, and therefore should we say that all you have to do is put it in the ground, that's all that matters? Or should we say again, no, that it doesn't take root yet, so therefore it's not going to be considered a malacha? Maybe this could be parallel to that broader discussion. And the Sefer Yesod HaYeshurun, a very flesh of a Sefer, it was a very prominent posik from Toronto, whose name is Gedalia Felder. His son is Rav Aaron Felder, who's written, is alive now, has written some Svarim and Halacha. Some of them are in English, some are in Hebrew. But the father was a postdoc in Toronto, Gedalia Felder, so he has Svarim and Halacha, and he has a set that's just on Shabbos. So in his discussion of Malachas, so he raises the question that it says in the Shulchan Aruch that if somebody wants to throw seeds onto the ground, he has a chicken coop. So the chickens are out in the dirt, and you want to throw seeds onto the dirt so that the chicken can feed on them. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch that you should say you should not throw enough seeds that they're not going to eat it within 3 days. That if you throw 1 day's worth of food, that's okay. 2 days worth of food, that's okay. But if it's 3 days worth of food, so it's going to, they're not going to get to it for 3 days, and then that's going to end up getting planted. So that's a problem. But it sounds like if it's only 1 day's worth, so it's not a problem. So he asks on the Chasinuch, okay, so here, why isn't this like putting seeds on the ground and then uprooting them? The Chasinuch said that's not going to help. If you put seeds in the ground and uprooting them and uproot them later, it's not going to end the malacha. So here, that's basically what's happening. You're putting it on the ground and you're relying on the fact that the chickens will eat it before it's going to actually take root. So the Sefer Yudim Bahalach very nice contemporary sefer by Rav Shlomo Zalman Shmaya. Again, I hope it's clear. No one's expected to know any of these names. It's just giving credit where credit is due in terms of the discussion. So he notes that he doesn't think this is really comparable to what the Mechassinuch is talking about. Because first of all, this is not a Maisa Zriya, that the Mechassinuch's whole point is you do an action of Zriya so that we don't care what happens afterwards. But here, your intent here is to feed the animals, so it's not really a Maisa Zriya in the first place. And secondly, if you know that it's functionally impossible for the seeds to take root because you have chickens who are eating there, so the chickens are going to consume them before there's time for anything to happen, so then presumably this is like planting in the desert. If you plant in an area where it's not feasible for the seeds to take root, if you plant in the sand, so then that's not a malacha. So the whole nature of the malacha is that it's possible and presumably going to happen that it's going to take root. But if it's not going to happen because there's an external impediment, so presumably that's more than you are planting it and taking it out later, that's planting it in a place where it never really had potential to grow. Parenthetically, we'll discuss this more in the context of Choresh. So I just gave the example of planting in sand. So the Rishonim discussed in the context of Choresh that we have a fundamental issue in terms of the Malachos in general, that of course the Malachos did take place in the Mishkan in the desert, in the context in which nowadays if you were to do those same Malachos, you probably would not be Chayiv. So we have to figure out exactly the relationship between what actually took place in the Mishkan. And nowadays, because Zareh and Choresh, let's say these first two malachas, if you would do them in a desert, you would presumably not be chayav for them. This is not an area, it's not called arable land, which affects the definition of both Zareh and Choresh. So if we're basing our malachas on the Mishkan, so how exactly did they do the malachas in a way that they're chayav for? That's the question that we'll give more time to in the context of Choresh. So, in any event, that's another issue here. So, the Gemara on Daf Pei Aleph in the Sefer Shabbos talks about a different point. Talks about, let's say you have what's known as an atzitz nakuv. You have a flower pot, and the flower pot has holes in it. So, the purpose of such a flower pot is that it holds your flowers, but you can also connect it to a larger source of nourishment. So you can put a pot like that, in the field, and you'll be able to walk around with it later. It'll be tended to on its own, but it's getting nourishment from the ground. So the Gemara says that if you pick it up and put it on a peg, so it's now a little bit higher, a little bit farther away from the ground, the Gemara says that is a problem of kotzer, as if you've pulled it out of the ground. And if you did the reverse, if you took it from a higher place and put it closer to the ground, so that is Zareya. So most of the Rishonim, the Rambam may be an exception, but most of the Rishonim understand that that is actually not literal. The Gemara seems to say you're chayiv for that, but the Rishonim feel that that's probably not literal, and that that's really Nisad Rabbanim, that that's not actual Zareya and Kosar. It's an Issa D'Rabbanan. They come to that for a technical reason, because the Gemara says that you're allowed to do that. Let's say you have a rock that's wrapped in vegetation, and you need the rock for hygienic purposes. So the Gemara says, we allow you to use the rock for hygienic, we allow you Issa D'Rabbanan for Kavod Abrios. So you're allowed to pick up the rock, even if it's going to shift the nourishment of this vegetation. So it must be that it's only an Issa D'Rabbanan. Because of that kasha that most of the Rishonim say that this is not Nisr Deraisa. So, okay, so that's an important point, that that's Asr but Midrabanan. But it's an interesting question, so why is that not Asr Midrabanan? That if you're changing the pace of how this flower, let's say, or this vegetable is growing, is going to grow faster or slower, that's presumably why you do it. You adjust the distance, and you lift it up a little bit so it still has nourishment from the ground, but it's not as direct, so it's not coming at the same pace. So you're doing that in order to make it grow faster or slower. So if we said that, let's say, we'll talk about this more, but watering the ground is considered to be an act of Zareya, so then why is this not Zareya? Anything you're going to do, like we said before, from the Yerushalmi to enhance something, is an act of Zareya, so why shouldn't that be true here as well? So it's a difficult question, but the Egletal does assume that you have to, he says you have to say that there's a chiluk between simply changing the pace, speeding it up or slowing it down, and actually improving it. That here nothing's going to be better or worse, it's just going to be faster or slower. That's not the same as, let's say, watering the ground, which makes it grow healthier. That's different. Again, it's a little bit of a surprising chiluk. I don't know if we would have said this on our own, but it's basically forced to say that because of the Makoros that seem to push us in that direction. And that forces another discussion in terms of, yet again, there's a couple, it's interesting, there's a three or four discussions that draw on distinguishing between Zareya and Bishel. So we just mentioned one a few minutes ago. And this is another one, that we find that when it comes to Bishel, there's an act called Hagasa, that if you're going to stir the pot in such a way that the food gets cooked quicker, so then that is probably an Isur D'oraisa, that's probably a Malacha itself. So why should that be different here, that if you're making the plant grow quicker, so why don't we say that it's like Hagasa, that's a, just like we find by Bishel, it should be a, that should be a D'oraisa. So this is Zriya Bishel question number two, if you're keeping score at home. There's definitely at least one more that's potentially on the table, but this is number two. So he suggests, Yegli Tal, that and others discuss along these lines, that if you want to follow the Minchas Chinuch's distinction, which again we said the Yegli Tal is partial to, so then that could explain it, that the distinction between Bishel and Zriya is that Zriya happens right away, the Malacha happens immediately, and Bishel only happens when it's done. So if you're bringing about the end of the Malacha quicker, so then that's also Malacha. When it comes to Bishel, the Malacha is only going to happen when it's finished. So bringing that finish along quicker is going to be an act of Bishel. But when it comes to Zriya, if you follow the Chassidut's view that you did the Zriya already, once you put it in the ground, so then that's going to be a that's going to be an act of Zriya happening already, so what happens afterwards is not a deraisa. Again, still, we thought it was a deraisa because watering it and the like is deraisa, but apparently that's where you come to the Gital's original chiluk, that it's only about the pace, it's not about the quality other than that. Hi.
How do you say that about almost any of the main malachas are sort of told us that we have in the Gemara, that Zomer, Mark, Mavrik, those are all post, you know, Ashrasha.
Not all of them. I mean, so we're getting, it's the same kind of question when it comes to the watering. I mean,
right.
Again, I think if you were left to your own devices, you would have thought that this is a malach. You would have thought that accelerating the pace is in this category. And I think that it's only because of this makaros that you're forced to come with this chiluk. That's the chiluk is not so intuitive. And again, even the whole discussion is because the Rishonim feel pushed by a different kasha. So the Acharonim feel that they have to interpret this Gemara as a Drabbanon, and since it's Drabbanon, so then you have to explain why. I think without that, if you would have come to a different conclusion, it's a difficult distinction, but that's essentially what he says, that just accelerating the pace is not considered to be an improvement, while watering it, pruning it, these are things that if you don't do it, it's going to have a significant effect on the ultimate development of the produce. That's a malacha of Zareya. But just making it happen quicker or slower is not necessarily going to be in this category. Okay, so there is a, that's itself an interesting question. It's also an interesting question to raise. What if you have a Atzitz She'eino Nakuv? Let's say you have a pot that does not have a hole in it. So is that considered to be a malacha if you plant into that context? If you put something not in the ground, but you put it in a pot that has dirt in it, or you do whatever else, if you water that pot, whatever it is, so is that considered to be a malacha? So that was the major machlokas, which doesn't necessarily have such a clear resolution. But there are many who feel that that is not an Issa Deraisa, that is not considered to be the derech of planting this way. Normally you plant in the dirt, you plant in the ground, and many felt that this was a Issa Derabana. The Menchas Chinuch has an interesting suffix about this. He doesn't know what the answer is, but if you say that that is a Malacha Deraisa, if you say that that is a Chiyuv Deraisa, so what about if you take it out of the pot and then you put it into the actual ground? So would that be double Zriya? Can you have Zriya twice? Say something that's already planted can be planted again? Maybe. So he's not sure about that, but that's dependent on this question of whether planting in the pot is considered to be an act of Zriya Mamish. Clearly, if you hold it's Drabanan, so then for sure, then to actually move it from the pot and take the whole thing and put it into the ground would be Doraisa for sure.
Can you say the opposite? If it's both Doraisa anyway, so you didn't really even improve it at all. You just like, it's like moving it from one piece of dirt to a foot over. So you probably
if it's both Raisas?
Then you didn't really even improve anything.
But if taking something, the Maisa Zriya, the way he himself puts it, is taking seeds and putting them in the ground, right? So right now you have it in a pot, and you're going to take it and put it into the ground, it would seem like that's the Maisa Zriya. So the question is, can you take a planted seed and plant it again? So that's basically his suffix. The Rambam does have a discussion. The Gemara talks about this case, we're talking about a different malacha, and it's probably a different scenario. But the Rambam has a case if you are shorei chitin, and basically if you take Eichem as a Gemara and Zvachim, he talks about it in the context of a different malacha. But let's say if you take barley, or you take wheat, and you put it in water, you soak it in water. So the Rambam says that there is a chiyuv for a toldah of Zareya. This is Hilchos Shabbos Perek Ches Halacha Beis. And soaking these seeds is going to be an act of Zareya. So some understand, the Mekavos HaMishnah and Tiferes Yisrael understand, that things grow this way, that eventually it's going to sprout, and therefore it's considered to be a malacha of Zareya for that reason. And others understand differently. The Radbaz has a tshuva where he understands differently, and it's very significant, because then it creates another yisod in Hilchos Shabbos. Radbaz says the chiyuv is not because it's going to sprout in the water, but because it'll prepare it to take effect in the soil better. So eventually you'll take these seeds and you put them in, you'll put them in the soil, and then it's going to grow more effectively. So then what comes out from this Radbaz is a big chiddush. Rav Moshe Brown, his sefer, Rockway, is sefer on Hilchos Shabbos, talks about this as a yisod, that it sounds like the Rambam is teaching us a chiddush, that preparing for a malacha to be more effective is also, let's say, a tolda of the malacha. That's assuming that that's your understanding of what this Rambam means. If you say, like the Merkabit Mishnah, that it's a different way of growing, you don't necessarily have this yisod. But if you follow the Rabbaz's understanding in the Rambam, and there are other Makoros, we'll talk about in other contexts, where you find this idea as well, that preparing something for future malacha may also have a status like a malacha. So that's a big chiddush. But in any event, the Magen Avraham points out the halacha that it has to be for a significant period of time. He says like a half a day. You have to soak it for about a half a day in order for this to be significant. And therefore he says that he thinks it's pashut, that you're allowed to do this to feed your animals. So let's say you want to feed these pieces of wheat or barley to your animals, and it's going to be easier for them to eat if it's soaked in water. So he thinks it's pashut. That's not what the Rambam's talking about. That not the simple act of putting it in water for other purposes is not going to necessarily be this act of zareya. You leave it there for half a day, which presumably is consistent with either interpretation, that you're doing it to sort of sprout, or you'll do it so that it'll really be ready for the other malacha. That's when it has a possible connection to the malacha. Rav Vosner has a tshuva where it's not really clear how it comes out of the halacha, but there are those who compare this to a modern innovation that we have, hydroponics. It's possible now to grow produce in water, and it's a major nafka mina coming up to a Shemitah year. There's a major discussion whether or not such growth is subject to the laws of Shemitah or not. So Rav Vosner writes in his Tshuvas that this is not what the Rambam was talking about, though, because the hydroponics is done in a way that there are nutrients that are put in the water, that there's more that's closer to an actual act of Zriya. But still, what to ask about whether or not this matches all the qualifications of Zriya Bekarka, and it has major implications in other areas of halacha. But he thinks that this is more than what the Rambam was talking about in terms of this particular statement of the Rambam. And others say that this is perhaps relevant to the Mechaschina's position that we mentioned before, that even if when you put something in the ground, it doesn't actually take root yet, it's still an active Zriya. So again, this preparation for Zriya maybe is considered to be an active Zriya. And the Merkavos HaMishnah's position that it's going to sprout, some hold that this is a proof for the whole deal by Atzit Shein HaNakov, that you can have Zriya in the context outside of the A field. And again, it's going to be Tali if you follow the Rabbaz's position, you follow the Merkavos HaMishnah's position. So basically, the understanding that you have in this Rambam is very significant in one direction or the other, depending on how you understand it. So we just have a few more minutes. We'll just try to quickly get a few other issues in under the wire. There is a discussion in Achronim in general, based on the Rishonim, that if you say that there's a Maisa Zriya that you're chayav for on Shabbos, again, what does that mean? Does that mean you just have to drop something on the ground? Or do you have to actually cover it in karka? Is that part of the definition of Zriya? That's the whole discussion. I'll mention maybe a couple of other issues. The whole fact that, again, the Gemara does say that watering the ground is a tolda. It's a question, what is a tolda of? That's a whole discussion. The first half in Moed Katan, there's a whole Gemara. We'll talk about that in the context of Choresh. It's either a tolda of Zareya or a tolda of Choresh. We'll talk about that in the context of Choresh. But that has major nafkaminas also, the fact that we don't want to water the ground. So therefore, it says in the Shulchan Aruch that we shouldn't wash our hands over the ground because the water will get into the ground, and that's going to be a psigresha issue. The Maharal had an interesting chiddush about that, which maybe we'll discuss in a different context in the interest of time. He disagreed with that, but that's what is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that you shouldn't water your hands over the ground. So it's a shaila whether you should even eat in the ground. Mishnah Berurah talks about having a picnic on Shabbos or having a kiddush outside might be an issue. There's a lot of nuances to the issue. I'm just mentioning it very briefly in the interest of time. It's not necessarily a Isser Gomer, but it's a concern to have that maybe having liquids outside or eating outside is going to lead to spilling things on the ground. And there's a major discussion also about, just came off of Sukkot. So let's say sometimes it rains and you have a tarp over the sukkah, and then the water got on top of the tarp, so now you want to take it off, so the water is going to spill on the ground. So there's a whole discussion whether you're allowed to do that on Shabbos or not. Post can talk about a difference between if the water is going to go directly on the ground or the water will go on the concrete, and then the concrete will spill onto the water. It will be an indirect kind of psik ratio. But the post can also mention the kula there, that if it just rained, so then if the water is saturated, the ground, the grass is saturated with water, so then it's not clear that that's even an issue to begin with. That maybe it's only an issue when it's a normal weather situation. So there's some benefit to the ground, so then that's a problem. But if the water has already saturated the ground, maybe that's also a relevant kula in the context of fixing your sukkah up after the rain, which is also relevant to the question. The post can have a debate about if somebody relieves himself on the ground, is that considered to be an issue of Zareya? It's also a little Messiah's question, and some consider that to be bad for the ground, and therefore it's not relevant to Zareya. And others consider it to be beneficial, and it's a question whether that's significant or not. Posts can talk about spitting on the ground, many posts can think that's not significant, even if you're technically the drop of water going on the ground, it's shalob kavana, and it's not significant. Just to try to slip in two other issues here. One issue Jonathan and I were talking about this morning is there is a major discussion in Poskim. So if anything that enhances the growth is an issue, so what about something that's kind of indirect, such as lifting up the shades so that more sunlight gets to the plants? So this has to do a lot with the parallel to Tzad that hopefully we'll eventually talk about, a major machlokas within Hilcha Shabbos. But just to say it briefly, there basically are three views. Now, that there are those who say that this is mutter even if you intend. Let's say you want to open the window, you have two intentions in mind. You want to have more light in the room so you can see, and also the light will benefit your plants. So even if you have that explicit intention, there are some poskim who allow that. It's based on a Rashba, which I'll explain in more context later. And then on the other extreme, based on Aran, there are those who are machmir that even if your intent is only that you should have more light to see for yourself, but it's going to have an impact on your plants, so then it's still auster because of the psik ratio that's involved. And my impression is a popular view is the middle view, that if you have intent for something else, even if it's a psik ratio that's going to help the plants, then there's room huckle on that. That's the middle view. And again, so the three views are machmir even without intent to help the plant, mako even with intent to help the plant, and the common pshara that if your intent is not for the plants, your intent is for something else, then that should be mutter. And again, in the future, I'll flesh out the backstory in terms of what that machlokas is about. It has implications in many other areas of halacha. One of the factors here also is that if it's inside your house, we mentioned a few minutes ago that an otzit she'eino nakuv, it's not clear that it's a deraisa to begin with, so presumably that's what you have inside your house. And that will help the shaila because it would be a derabanan to begin with. Although it's not the only context in which the shaila comes up. People do have greenhouses outside where they have house structures on top of things that are actually in the ground. And the shaila does come up about adjusting sunlight with actual plants that are in the ground. It's just not the shaila that most of us are dealing with halacha l'maaseh. Jonathan mentioned to me this morning that there's a tzad b'hakel if you don't really believe that it's going to have a significant impact for the plants, and that maybe your wife thinks it does and you don't think it does, and you want to open it for other reasons, another tzad b'hakel. Could be. Just quickly throw in, before we run out of time, with a third issue that involves a comparison between Zriya and Bishul. So, separate from the whole question of whether you should take the seeds out of the ground in order to prevent a malacha, in any event, the Mishnah says in Gittin that they made a knas, along the lines of Maisa Shabbos, a person shouldn't benefit from his act of Zriya on Shabbos. So if he planted something on Shabbos, he should uproot the plants afterwards. So the Achronim discussed that that's a little bit more machmir than what we find by Bishul, that if somebody cooks on Shabbos, so then at least for other people, vis-a-vis other people, the food is also on Shabbos, but it's mutter after Shabbos. We don't say he has to uncook the food or destroy the food. So it's a shaila why there is such a distinction. Why is it that we're more machmir by Zriya than by Bishul in terms of this drabbanon of the knas afterwards? So if you look in the Mishnah Berurah, you look in the later Svarim, so there are a number of different Svaras as to what the chiluk is. Some say that the issue is, Ms. Dipo said like this, that the planting is going to continue growing for a long time. The effects of your action on Shabbos are going to continue to have effect. So we said you should stop that effect while Bishul is done already, it's not going to change. Others say that the whole nature of Zriya is that you want it to last for a long time, so then we have to freshter your intent. While when it comes to Bishul is usually for media purposes, so then once some time has passed, you don't necessarily have to have such a concern. There are various svaras along those lines, and we mentioned at the time that the Rav Yitzchok Zilberstein has an interesting discussion in one of his svaras in terms of trying to figure out what are the gedarim of a knas based on these different terutzim, because he talks about typically, he always has these very fancy shilas. So he talks about this unusual shaila that there was an Israeli contractor who became a Baal Tshuva. So once he became religious, he realized that he had a problem because he was a contractor, so during the week he worked for other people's houses, and as one day off, he would build his own house. So in Israel, they don't have some days off, so they have Shabbos off. So he built his entire house purely on Shabbos. And it's hard to imagine, it's a long-term project, but it happened only on Shabbos, because that was when he was working on his own house. So then he had the Shaila, so is he allowed to live in his house on Shabbos? Is he allowed to benefit from it? So in discussing that Shaila, he goes through the different suggestions in terms of the chiluk between Bishul and Zriya to try to figure out what is the Hagdara for when you have a Knas afterwards and when you don't have a Knas afterwards. He ends up actually being Machmer on the Shaila. He allows him to sell it. He doesn't mean he can't get any Hanel whatsoever. He could sell it to somebody else, but he didn't think that this person should live in the house. And it's recorded there that one of the Talmidim thought that you would think this is an appropriate case for Takanas HaShavim. The Gemara says that if somebody stole something, or stole a brick from somebody else, normally you got to return whatever you stole. But if you stole the brick and you built it into the house, and now you built a skyscraper on top of this brick, so no one's ever going to do tshuva if he has to destroy his skyscraper in order to give back the brick. So sometimes we make a takanas hashavin that we remorse a little bit on the consequences in order to make tshuva possible. So they asked him, and he thinks, hey, this guy is about tshuva. He turns his whole life around. You can tell him that now he's got to destroy their, or sell the house that he built because of this knas drabanan. Isn't there room for takanas hashavin a little bit? So I think there might be such a scar, but it happens to be that the Zilberstein who discussed this wasn't ready to make based on that. Okay, so there's more to say about Zaleya, but we'll time a little bit. So I got willing tomorrow, we will...